This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by a new natural product from Future Farm Botanicals, created exclusively to help promote a better immune response: elderberry with zinc and echinacea. Future Farm's elderberry with zinc and echinacea is the first to combine these three powerful ingredients together. Elderberry is packed with antioxidants, vitamins, and may boost your immune system. Echinacea has been shown to activate chemicals in the body that decrease inflammation. And zinc activates T lymphocytes. Low zinc has been associated with increased susceptibility. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216. That's 888-841-7216. Or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Elderberry with zinc and echinacea is an all-natural, science-based formula and works without adverse side effects. Take advantage of Future Farm's buy two, get one free offer at MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein you can pose your questions. It's an opportunity for you to ask us about anything that is of concern to you. And of course, a big concern lately has been the coronavirus. But in the spirit of emerging from lockdown, we're opening up to questions of all kinds. And I guess it's a good sign, Layla, that
it really is
not all our it's kind of unprecedented, because the last few weeks it's been pretty much relentlessly COVID-19 questions, and in a way it's kind of reassuring that people are returning to ordinary everyday concerns.
Yes, I really welcome that.
Yeah, so you know, this is part of our jailbreak strategy here.
Right.
Just to mention that, you know, we have been doing telemedicine. We just both got done with seeing a few of our patients on Skype, doing some consultations. And that's working out pretty well. But our office is opening up right after Memorial Day. It's going to be a little different because we will exercise precautions. There'll be a lot of swabbing down. There'll be a lot of disinfectant used. We're going to limit the number of patients who come into the practice all at once. So we're going to be wearing masks, and we'll be examining patients with gloves. And so there's going to be some changes and some constraints, but the office is opening up next week. But I'll also mention that one of the things that we're doing, you know, there has been a lot of demand for first visits, people who haven't seen us, where all our telemedicine has been done with patients who have already come to see us, Leila and I. But we're now, there is a rule in New York State whereby you can't initiate a patient contact via telemedicine. The patient must come in, the patient must be physically examined, and then you can, you know, subsequently correspond, you know, and have follow-up visits via telemedicine. But that initial visit, well, due to the coronavirus emergency, that requirement has been, at very least, temporarily waived. And that's good news, because it enables some people who have urgent concerns that have emerged during this lockdown and who are constrained in terms of, you know, say you're older, maybe you have diabetes, you know, maybe you have one of the comorbidities that makes you feel a little insecure about taking public transportation and coming to an office in Manhattan, riding an elevator, coming into an office with strangers. So we're going to initiate some telemedicine for first visits. So those of you who are interested in doing that, you can call the office. DrHoffman.com has the information about that. So check it out, please. And we welcome that, because, you know, it was sort of limiting our ability to, I mean, we were working with existing patients, but the concern was initiating with new patients. Now we're going to do that. Before we get to questions, by the way, radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions, as usual. I just happened to, in my studio, I have a TV, you know, and usually when I'm doing podcasts like this, it's, you know, the sound is off, but it's going on in the background. But I had it on before we connected, and the president was having one of his press conferences, but this was sort of in the way of a dog and pony show. He had the entire cabinet report on different aspects of their response to the COVID-19 pandemic. And, you know, we went through, you know, various people, and predictably, you know, the border security guy was talking about border security, and, you know, Mnuchin was talking, the Treasury Secretary was talking about, you know, the extraordinary measures they're taking to, whatever, resuscitate the economy.
Yes.
And then, you know, as usual stuff, right? You know, so, and, but then they introduced someone who I'd never seen before. There, did you realize that within the HHS, this huge, you know, Health and Human Services agency?
Yeah, there is Department of Health and Human Services. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Right there. I mean, there's the secretary, you know, who heads up that agency. I guess that's, is that Azar? Yeah, Azar, I think, right?
Yes.
And then there is this person who is an assistant HHS secretary who is an MD, and her bailiwick is mental health. And she got up, you know, they, because they were taking turns, she got up and she gave a statement. Her name is Dr. Eleanor McCants Katz, one of those hyphenated names with a dash. And she gave a statement, a wonderful statement. And I she really hit it out of the park, because what she said in essence was, and by the way, her background is as a psychiatrist. Okay. She specializes in mental health. That qualifies her to talk about mental health. But interestingly, she also has a background in epidemiology and infectious disease.
And
she prefaced her remarks by saying, never did I imagine in my career that these two seemingly disparate aspects of my training were going to be so critically conjoined during a health crisis in America. And she went on to say that, you know, there's some really serious mental health consequences of this coronavirus pandemic, is that the isolation, the loss of job security, the worry about the virus has caused a great deal of, there's a very, very high degree of mental health problems. And she nailed it by saying, and this is something we actually experienced, because we both talked to one of our patients earlier, who was literally petrified at the idea of going outside and going out into the real world. This is what the assistant HH secretary alluded to. She said, people are so fearful that we're going to really have some work to do to undo. You know, it's one thing to get people to comply and lock down, you know, to have the discipline to stay home and, you know, forego their occupations and their social lives and everything. But how do you unravel this? How do you go back to a sense of security and normalcy? I mean, the degree of agoraphobia, I mean, we actually have almost government mandated agoraphobia. And media fueled agoraphobia. I mean, you know, that's a medical condition where people are afraid to go outside. This is now the normal state for a high percentage of Americans. And she, you know, she mentioned this, and I thought that really resonated.
Yeah, it certainly does. You know, I've also warned people to, you know, and psychiatrists have said this too. Don't watch the news all day long. It's like being re-traumatized and re-traumatized. Yes. I remember at 9/11, Dr. Hoffman, we were warned then too not to keep watching the news programs that showed those three, four horrible crashes over and over and over. Yeah. Not just the Twin Towers, but the Pentagon, Pennsylvania, but the Twin Towers over and over.
It's reenacting it. It's reenacting it. Yes, exactly.
Yes, yes. So
and that's what the media to, and that's what the media does. I mean,
that's the media does it. Hits everybody over the head with it over and over and over and over again.
And the job of the media is to basically get attention, draw attention to itself. And you don't do that with scenes of people peaceably going about their lives and normalizing. I mean, you know, maybe they're going to pay some lip service to it, and they'll show a few instances of, people, going back to restaurants, sitting outside in patios. But, what really gets people excited is going right to that limbic system, that emotional center of our brains, with images that are scary. You know, people, body bags and, freezer trailers pulled up to hospitals. You know, that's what I think cements people's viewership.
Yeah. So people have to take care not just of their physical bodies, eat right, exercise, do all the right things, get some fresh air, but we have to take care of our mental health and how we're going to choose what we decide to expose ourselves to via the media and how we choose to react to all of it.
Yep.
And
I got to say this is, I think that there is some practical benefit to wearing masks. But it's marginal. It's not that decisive, whether you wear a mask or not. I think what's more important is to, the social distancing, the lack, the not congregating, we really need to take care of some issues like the crowding during public transportation. That's going to be, something we're going to have to tackle. But the mask thing, unfortunately, really telegraphs a message that's kind of terrifying to people. As long as we're going to have to wear masks, I really don't accept that that's the new normal. That's just not going to cut it long term. I don't want to believe that forever and a day we're going to have to wear masks, because there's just
that's its own psychological
value.
Trauma.
Yeah, that right. The message that
the cover your face message on the LIE I was talking about last week.
Right.
Cover your face in public. Not your nose and your mouth. Cover your face. I mean, you think about that phrase. It hurts.
Yes, it does.
Right?
It's a psychic injury for sure.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just thought that perspective was important to hear. And it's in line with the effort, as problematic as it is, that we need to loosen the lockdown. And we need to take measures to move towards normalization. And there're going to be some setbacks. There's going to be some stumbling blocks. There's going to be some risk associated with that, but it's essential. So anyway, that being said, let's get to questions, and maybe we can actually leave this topic behind.
Yeah. Oh.
Forget about your coronavirus troubles, because if you think you've got troubles, wait till you hear some of these questions.
We have an email from Maya. Maya says, I'm a 72-year-old lady with very low blood pressure, 90 over 60.
Yeah.
I also have Hashimoto's. I'm gluten-free, dairy-free. I'm vegetarian. However, I eat fish and I eat eggs twice a week or so. I don't take any medication, but my ferritin level is quite high at 185 and my iron at 102. Mm-hmm. How do I lower my ferritin?
Okay. So that's, interesting. And she gave us a lot of information, some of which is germane and some of which is, just incidental. I think it's of interest that she is quasi-vegetarian. She is getting iron sources in her diet. So she's certainly not suffering from dietary iron overload.
Right.
There's a couple of reasons for elevated ferritin. Ferritin is a sensitive measure of iron. But it's sometimes subject to distortion. It could be real that she has a fairly high ferritin. And by the way, ferritin can be okay until it's up to about 200. So hers is not really high.
Right.
But ferritin also is subject to distortion when you have inflammation. Exactly.
Yeah.
So what I don't know if she is just has high iron or if she has the workup would include, looking at inflammatory markers, looking at C-reactive protein, looking at sed rate, taking a history to see if she has some inflammatory disorder or if she has had a recent infection. By the way, the patients with coronavirus, I hate to keep coming back to this, have very high ferritins. Their ferritins are sky high because they're very inflamed. So the other thing is that there could be a hereditary iron overload condition called hemochromatosis, and that can be detected based on a gene. The test now is a gene test. And that it's the HFE gene, and if the HFE, there's really two copies of it. If you have one, you might have a slight tendency to overload. If you have two, you're going to really have a high tendency. Women tend to have less consequences of that gene because for at least half of their lives, they're menstruating, they're losing blood.
They're also shedding that excess iron, which is important.
Exactly. So the answer is it could be not a problem.
Yeah. It may not be a problem, but there's a complication here. Maya is probably not a good candidate to give blood because her blood pressure is very low.
Yes, and she's older, and they tend to be a little more conservative about, you know, blood donation when you're older.
Right, at 72. So, that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. The treatment for it would be to give blood.
And it's interesting that she's vegetarian, eggs and fish. She's really not getting much iron source. Egg yolk, maybe some of the fish, maybe some of the spinach, the lentils, if she's having anything like that, you know, the peas, but not. I wonder, this is actually something that I read Dr. Andrew Saul. Andrew Saul, PhD, he's talked about vitamin C increasing the absorption of iron so much that you should actually stop taking vitamin C with meals. I thought this was interesting. And instead, to maybe take the buffered form of vitamin C, the powder, in between meals so that you don't absorb
any there is a, there's
iron.
A synergy. And in fact, you know, when we want iron to really be well absorbed, we'll tell people to take it with some vitamin C. And the converse is this. You want to lower your iron slightly? Drink black tea.
It inhibits the absorption of the iron, the tannins.
By a small amount. You know, it's not going to dramatically, you know, tank your. The way they discovered this is that in Israel, they have a habit, or they used to have a habit, of giving babies a bottle with tea, black tea. You know, instead of fruit juice, instead of milk. You know, because the babies, you know, just pacify the baby, pass the bottle. You know, and put tea in the baby bottle, and what happened is they found a fairly high incidence of iron deficiency among the children who were given black tea bottle feeding, and then they discovered that there was some interference with iron absorption or iron metabolism. Interesting.
Interesting. Wow. So, okay. All right. So Maya would need to get a workup and see if it is indeed high, her ferritin, and if there's any inflammation behind it.
But at 185, that's not a serious problem.
It's not.
I'm not too worried about it.
Yeah.
There's some people who are a little bit, I'll call them iron overload hawks. They're very aggressive about dealing with iron overload because, you know, what's the problem with excess iron? Excess iron has been implicated in cardiovascular disease, in brain disease,
and feeding infection,
liver disease. So, in fact, it's thought that the differential between male cardiovascular disease and female cardiovascular disease is due in part to the fact that men have a lot more iron than women do because men don't menstruate, obviously. Men don't engage in sword fights anymore. I mean, at least the sword fights kind of took care of it, you know.
You don't bleed a little here and there.
Right. During the lockdown, I've been watching too many Errol Flynn movies, so I'm sorry.
There's the reason. Okay.
I watched Captain Blood the other night, so that was good.
Oh, my. Okay.
speaking of guilty pleasures, I was just flipping channels the other night, and I saw this crazy movie, 1984. It's a movie called Red Dawn. And it's a Cold War movie, and it's become sort of a cult classic because it's about the Russians, along with the Nicaraguan and Cubans, invade the United States. And so they occupy the West, and they're these high school students who become like a guerrilla army. They become like the American Viet Cong, you know, and they're like ambushing and sabotaging the Russians. You know, sort of a rah-rah movie for the Cold War, but like, you know, it's a little weird now. The movie was a big success among Second Amendment fans because they said, you see, it's good that people have a lot of hardware because we never know when we could be invaded. And then we can break out our, you know, AK-47s and we can resist the the invaders. It's a crazy movie, 1984.
Oh, my gosh. Red Dawn. Okay.
Yeah.
Cult put movie. It on my watch list.
Oh, you're definitely going to watch it. It's good. It's a hoot. All right.
This would be a good time to pause
to allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share a vital message with you.
There's never been a more important time to ensure your immune system is operating at its peak. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with a new natural solution from Future Farm Botanicals, created exclusively to help promote a better immune response. Elderberry with zinc and echinacea. Future Farm's elderberry with zinc and echinacea is the first to combine these three powerful ingredients together. Elderberry is packed with antioxidants, vitamins, and may boost your immune system. Echinacea has been shown to activate chemicals in the body that decrease inflammation, and zinc activates T lymphocytes. Low zinc has been associated with increased susceptibility. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216. That's 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Elderberry with zinc and echinacea is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. Take advantage of Future Farm's buy two, get one free offer at myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by ProPax with NT Factor, a complete vitamin and mineral formula. NT Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age, illness, or just being run down. NT Factor repairs damaged cells, restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT Factor for years, and now the 45-day money-back guarantee, you have nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158, that's 800-982-9158, or go to ntfactor.com, that's ntfactor.com.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine the continuing free resource to you. And now, Layla, give us a heads up on our next question.
Our next question is from Joanne. I have stiffness and soreness in my lower back after sitting or standing too long. I have some compression fractures. What are the best natural remedies that I can do to increase bone density in my spine?
Yeah.
And relieve pain?
Well, I'll tell you,
my
doctors
are pushing infusions, and I've been on Actonel for 3 months.
That's where I was going.
I'm interested in natural remedies.
I have to say that when you have a compression fracture, it's really an osteoporosis emergency. And yes, you can use cofactors, you can use strontium, you can use vitamin D and good forms of calcium with Ipraflavone. I think we have a question about the ideal form of calcium for later in this podcast. But when you have a compression fracture, it's absolutely devastating, and it means that you have profound osteoporosis. So this is a situation where you probably do need the infusion. Actonel orally is kind of weak. Hasn't been shown to sufficiently reverse that degree of osteoporosis. You know, if you have a compression fracture, you probably have a -3.5 or worse T score. And, you know, this would be a patient where I'd say, I'm sorry, don't look for natural alternatives. Look for natural complementarities along with a conventional treatment. In the past, what they used to do for compression fractures, it sort of sounded like it made sense. They used to use sort of a glue gun to inject kind of a cement into the spine to strengthen the spine. And they did that quite extensively Only to review it a few years later and discover that it did absolutely no good. There was absolutely no difference in the degree of pain or disability that patients experienced with a compression fracture. But compression fractures are dangerous for another reason, aside from pain. They tend to make people hunchbacked. Or kyphotic is the word in medicine for this. They're all bent over. And when you're bent over, your lung capacity decreases. And if you get, a respiratory infection or pneumonia, your reserve is really severely limited because you can only expand your lungs so far. So, I think it really deserves aggressive action that those doctors are suggesting, unfortunately.
Wow. Okay. Joanne, there is your answer. We hope you feel better soon.
All right. Let's give us a heads up on what's coming up in part two, because we're going to divide this into two parts.
Yeah. Chip wants to know, Dr. Hoffman, what supplements do you take?
Hey, I got to go to the refrigerator to see. All right. We'll tackle it, but it's going to take a long time to enumerate them. We'll do that in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.